And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of The Two Brandons. This is Brandon Thomas.
And this is Brandon Easton.
And we are back at you, the first installment of 2015. We apologize for the lengthy absence. Easton and myself have been extremely busy with new challenges, new responsibilities, which will lead to some pretty exciting developments for us both later on this year that you will hear about in due time. So in our first installment of the year, we were going to start somewhere else, but we want to make these as timely as possible. And there was a lot of discussion this morning about some recent announcements out of DC Comics. More specifically, some recent announcements in regard to costume changes for their big three, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. I'm sure a lot of you have seen the new designs. I'm sure you have at least seen a lot of the intense discussion there has been about the new costumes and how awful, or I don't know, what's the same, this, another word that means awful, but not awful.
Atrocious.
Yeah, awful, or how awful or atrocious the new costume designs are. So I'm not going to personally... The thing for me is that I find myself not caring. And when I say that, you know, I try to, you know, I don't mean to be that, you know, that guy, you know, because I hate that guy. I don't mean to be like the, you know, the contrary dude who's just like
the Grinch.
Sitting on the sidelines and just saying, why does, you know, anybody give a fuck about that? It's so stupid. But I just have to admit that these types of stories and these types of discussions really bring that out of me. And I enjoy mainstream comics. I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I don't, because I do.
Right.
It was a big reason why I fell in love with comics in the first place. But I mean, the older that I get as a, you know, as a consumer, and the older I get as a professional, the less thought that I am willing to devote to something like a costume change.
Bam.
Because at the end of the day, at this point, like, I really don't give a shit about characters anymore. Like, I'm not concerned about characters. Like, I follow creators. You know, I don't care how the costume looks, or, you know, any of these, you know, like the Jim Lee collars that everyone is complaining about, these little kind of like nitpicky things that it seems like people are very, very invested in. I mean, I am a lot more interested in who is actually writing and drawing the book. I mean, everybody knows that, you know, fucking Batman is not going to wear a robot suit, you know, forever.
Right.
Or that, you know, Superman has completely burned his cape, or, you know, Wonder Woman's, you know, Wolverine spikes or whatever are going to hang around. And I don't see the value, to be honest, in participating too heavily or devoting too much thought to what these characters that are owned by these massive corporations are wearing. I mean, I do not care. I don't know what it is, but I don't care about what they're wearing. I don't care about crossovers. I know a lot of people are jumping up and down about how, you know, they don't like crossovers. But again, you know, people say this stuff, but it's not true. The numbers and the economics prove that fans do care about costume changes. They do care about crossovers. And, you know, I will scream into the wind, you know, on certain subjects, just like the next, you know, out of control nerd that thinks he knows everything. But I really wish that, you know, I really wish that people didn't give a shit as much. I mean, I wish that people, I wish that people would devote this exact same, you know, intensity to creator owned books, you know, that are being published by all of these companies that are not Marvel and DC. And you just have to get to a point where you just realize that Marvel and DC are going to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They're going to do whatever they want to do. And none of this stuff is real. And none of this stuff is permanent. And at the end of the day, to me, the only thing that matters is whether or not the book is good or not. That's it. I mean, I try not to concern myself too much with the, you know, with the kind of intricacies of, you know, what everyone is wearing or how everyone looks or how close it is to the quote unquote classic look of the character. And it's like, I mean, if the scripts aren't good, if the art isn't good, nobody's going to care that Batman's wearing a robot suit. I mean, they're just not. I mean, who cares? You know, he's not going to wear a robot suit forever. You know, let him wear the suit for 6 months and then go back to, you know, the classic Batman suit. And it's just one of those things where you just wish the audience was a little more intelligent and a lot less reactionary. And people know that these companies have to do every single thing possible to get people to buy these books that they won't buy. But they try to, you know, they want to like burn them in the street because, you know, like, why are they trying to, you know, get new attention on the Wonder Woman book?
Right. Which nobody buys.
It's like, because they want people to buy it. They want people to talk about it. They want, you know, they want people to, I guess they want people to have these discussions. And because comic fans, you know, will always vote against their own self-interest and buy books they don't like out of habit and then bitch about it.
Yep.
And then, see, like, you know, like, I mean, it's like, all right, you don't like, you know, Bat Robot or whatever. Don't buy the book. But, you know, they are going to buy the book so they can get online and complain about it with other people that bought the book that shouldn't have bought it. So, I mean, I understand. I understand that, you know, we can often get a little out of control, but I just, you know, as with anything, I wish that a lot of this energy and this passion could be refocused to something that actually matters to the industry, because Batman's robot suit and Wonder Woman's, you know, arm spikes and Superman's jeans, you know, they don't really matter in the larger scheme of things.
And they never have.
Right. I mean, that's not what, you know, comics needs right now. Comics needs more attention being paid to creator-owned product and characters, to diversity in the industry, books written and created by creators of color, by women, gay, LGBT creators. I mean, to me, like, that's what I'm interested in personally. Like, that's what I'm passionate about. Right. And because I am, it's hard for me to give a shit about costume changes. And, you know, it wasn't always that way. I'm not trying to, you know, I wasn't always like this, but in the last few years, I just wish that people could devote their attention to other things.
Well, you know, you said pretty much a whole lot, and I'm going to kind of go back over it. Well, first, before I get started, okay, I want to give a great shout out to David Walker for his success, and David Walker for getting on to Cyborg.
Yep.
You know, which is a major coup, knowing what we know about this industry. So, mad props to David Walker, number one.
And you know what else, you know, is also a coup? The fact that Ivan Reis is going to be drawing his book, is awesome. Because, you know, anyone that has really closely studied comics and the way mainstream comics typically works, it would have been very easy for them to put an artist on that book that wasn't going to bring the insane amount of attention that Ivan Reis, who's been drawing, you know, Justice League and Aquaman and some of the biggest books that DC is putting out. The fact that they put him on Cyborg with David, that basically tells me and it tells the audience and it tells the retailers that DC is serious about this book coming out and being a success. They're not just going to throw the book, you know, to the four winds and just see, you know, what happens with it and then blame David for whatever happens with it.
Well, I mean, the important thing to remember is that Warner Brothers, the parent company of DC Comics, is having a Cyborg film come out in a couple of years. So they need to strengthen the character in the eyes of not just the regular comic book consumer, but the mainstream who does not really know who or what Cyborg is. But getting to before we get into all that stuff, I wanted to continue what you were talking about. You had said something in our last podcast when we were railing about how people complain and bitch endlessly about Arrow and the Flash. And one thing that has stood out to me that I have that's been bouncing around in my head that you said, and I laugh about it. You said, what must these people's lives be like? You know, what are these people's lives like who have nothing better to do than bitch and complain about superhero shows that could not exist? I mean, we could not have any superhero shows at all. And what would they bitch about then? The fact that there aren't any superhero shows?
Yes, yes. You know, that's exactly what they would bitch about.
Now, and here's the deal. I'll give you an example. This just happened on my page about a week and a half ago. Warner Brothers announced the new Supergirl show that'll be on CBS, I think, next year or the year after. And I think the woman's name is Melissa Benoist or Benoist or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think she's a cute girl. I mean, she looks like a teenage girl and she's in good shape and she's very young looking. And, you know, she looks like a teen girl. Like,
right. She looks like a girl.
Right. And the crazy thing is, you know, the costume is a mix of the Man of Steel aesthetic with the Silver Age, you know, short skirt, which looks really good on her. I mean, she looks fantastic in the role so far. Yeah, just visual.
And the costume is designed by the same designer that designed the suits for Arrow and the Flash.
Exactly. Now, yeah, because it's basically Greg Berlanti Productions all over again.
Right.
So the thing that made me angry is that people, just based on two pictures, that's all we've seen of this young lady in the costume. Two fucking pictures. Two promo pictures. No special effects. No script. Nothing. People are whining and bitching. Oh, she should be more toned. Or she should look this way. Or she should be thicker. I'm like, who the fuck do you think Supergirl is? It's a little teenage girl. Like, what are you fucking disgusting, perverted, pedophile, wannabe fanboys? What is it you want to see? You know, like, her titties ain't going to be hanging out, excuse my language. I mean, it's not going to happen. You know, she's a little girl, and she should be a little girl.
And it's not necessary. That's the way it's supposed to be. It's not.
And the thing is that you said something else about the older you get and the more professional you become as a human being, you realize what matters and what doesn't, like family and love and, you know, romance and politics and bills and, you know, camaraderie and loyalty.
Aspirations.
You know, those things matter. Fucking Superman is going to be fine. At some point, and I'll bet my bottom goddamn dollar, at some point we are going to see the old DC Universe circa 1985 pop back up somewhere somehow. And all the people bitching and complaining about Wonder Woman's change and Batman's change and Superman. Look, I'm going to say this again. I said this before. I'm going to say it again because we could just keep saying this every podcast from now on. Nobody at Marvel Comics, nobody at DC Comics, nobody at Disney, nobody at Warner Brothers, nobody at any production company anywhere on this earth gives a fuck about your opinion. Literally, they do not give a fuck about what you think. You can whine all you want. You can post 75,000 messages on 20 message boards. But trust me when I say this. Trust me when I say this. Nobody at any studio gives a shit what any fanboy or fangirl thinks. Literally.
No.
Trust me on this. Trust me.
And you know why they don't? Because they don't vote with their dollars.
And there you go. And we've been saying this ad nauseum, man. We've been trying to explain that if you don't like something, then don't buy it. If you complain. See, the thing is, complaining does work if you know how to complain and if you complain about the right things. Every single studio on Earth has a customer service line. Every single comic book company, believe it or not, does have a customer service line. You could also participate in Nielsen surveys. Anybody can sign up for a Nielsen survey. And those are the things that people actually pay attention to. I said this on my Writing for Rookies podcast damn near 3-4 years ago, that if you want to complain, this is the method in which you can complain. But people would just rather get online with a bunch of people who don't know anything about how the comic book industry works. They don't know anything about how the film and television industry works. They don't know anything about how the literary industry works when it comes to book publishing. All they want, instead of learning, and you could just go to Google and type in a couple of keywords, and you could find out anything you want about how the industry operates. In the 21st century, ignorance is a choice. Yes, it is not an option.
Yes, it is.
If you don't understand why casting decisions are made the way that they are, it's because you don't want to learn. It's because you rather stay ignorant and be a bitching, complaining ass fanboys who jump on my feed when I post a very simple picture. I mean, it's gotten to the point
where I don't even want to post shit.
Yeah, because no matter what I post, some jackass jumps on there just to say something opposite. It's like fucking opposite day all the time on my feed. It's like I post something like, wow, you know, I saw the science fiction film Chappie, right?
Uh-huh.
And I posted, you know, I do very short reviews. You've seen my reviews. I don't get too deep into it. I just give you some basic thoughts. I said it was okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't say it was horrible. I didn't say it was great. I said it was okay. People are going to jump on there. Well, I liked it. I liked it a lot, you know, and I'm like, who gives a fuck? I didn't ask you whether or not you liked it. I just told you what I felt. Like, I don't understand how in this new social media reality that everybody thinks you're talking to them.
Right.
None of you, like, out of my Facebook, and I know people who are going to hear this and they might get offended, but I don't give a shit anymore. Like, I only know, like, 5% of the people on my Facebook page. You know, 5%. And that's pushing it. You know, and if I don't know you, and even if you know me, like, I don't need, like, you know, what I call the amen corner, where people gotta, you don't have to agree with me, but you also don't have to jump on when people are having a nice, friendly conversation.
Right.
And then just to say something negative, just to be a part of it. Like, I started blocking people like that. You know, there's a certain people who would just jump on there and say, well, you know, this is what, I'm like, I didn't ask you your opinion. I honestly did not. I didn't ask nobody's opinion. You know, I'll give you an example. When we did the last podcast, right?
Uh-huh.
Remember when we were doing the shout-outs? Some crazy-ass lady.
Oh, my God. I saw this.
In Detroit said, well, how is it you forgot about, you know, the guys at New Paradigm since blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, obviously, I've been talking about New Paradigm Studios since, what, 2013?
Yeah.
And because we didn't do a grand red carpet gesture to them at the end of our podcast, somehow I was forgetting what side my bread was buttered on, according to this crazy ass lady. And, you know, it's one of those things where people don't know you. Like, really, who the fuck are you to tell other people what they're thinking or making, you know, conclusions about people's character? If you don't know a person, really just shut the fuck up. You know, like, just like, literally. And that's where I'm at right now. Like, I don't understand where everybody gets these, like, this feeling like they know you and they have this right to make comments about your life. Like, if I'm on social media, I don't agree with everything I see on Facebook, but I'll be damned if I'm going to jump on and just, like, start fucking with people I don't know.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there are people who,
even,
you know,
even fucking with people you do know.
Right.
Because it's just like, I mean, seriously, it's like, is it actually worth the 20 minutes of my life that I'm going to expend, you know, like getting into some kind of like Facebook sparring match with this person? It's like, are either of our minds going to change at the end of the discussion? No, then I'm going to go and I'm going to do something else.
Exactly. And, you know, it's just that we live in this entitlement society now, and you see it on every conceivable, you see it in politics, and it goes through educational system, and you really see it. And I mean, the comic book fan base is the most entitled, spoiled bunch of whiners I've ever seen in my entire life. I don't know why it's gotten so bad, but there's this small pocket of fans who just cannot be happy for any fucking reason whatsoever.
No.
And that group has made it almost impossible to really enjoy comics. You know, at least online. Like, I don't even go to comic book stores anymore because everybody's snarky. Everybody thinks they're, like, funny. And I'm like, look, I just, you know, can you just, like, I just don't understand why nobody's happy.
I mean, you know, I don't get it. I am alarmingly happy. Right. There's a fucking Avengers movie coming out in 2 months that has a dope-ass looking trailer that, I mean, I just can't wait to see. There's a fucking Star Wars movie coming out at the end of the year. They just announced their first spinoff, Rogue One.
Rogue One, yes.
Come on. What else do you people need? What else do you need to be happy? Just be happy with something. And the same people that are going on and on about fucking costumes and going on and on about how, like, you know, the women are taking over the comics industry.
Right.
These are the same. It would be one thing if, you know, everybody has their thing that they're kind of psycho and out of control about, right?
Right.
Like,
yes.
Out of control, you know, nerd fanboy. But these motherfuckers only have one setting, you know, and their setting is like nerd outrage.
Yep.
I never hear these people that are going on and on about all this stuff that doesn't matter. I never hear these people compliment anybody. I never hear them say, read this book. Check out this interview with this creator that's doing a book that I love. You never see that. All you see is a bunch of complaining. You see, like, you know, one of these things, I'll tell you, the one thing that happened a few weeks ago that I almost jumped in on, but I stopped myself, was when Marvel got Spider-Man back. And there were all these, like, you know, black fans that were like, well, you know, they pushed Black Panther back, you know, so they could get, like, first of all, number one, do you know how fucking important Spider-Man is to anything? Like, any opportunity that Marvel Studios had to get Spider-Man back under their control, even if it's only partially, you take that chance. And number two, they moved Black Panther, yes, but they moved him into the prime blockbuster. They moved it to July of the next year.
Right, exactly.
They're basically like, hey, well, you know what? We're going to take this out of November, and we're going to put this in July, and we're going to turn it into a big fucking summer event. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, well, you know, you know, I was looking forward to seeing it. That's fine. You know, I can wait 6 months. But now maybe this can turn into a real event and isn't something like, we're not so sure about this, so we're going to hide it in November where it's safe, where if it doesn't do well, it's not going to cast like a bad shadow over Marvel Studios. I mean, I saw it as an opportunity to get one of the most important characters, the most important Marvel characters, back under their control, and I saw it as a vote of confidence for Black Panther. I saw that it was like, well, hey, apparently they're confident about the movie because they wouldn't have moved this shit to July if they thought they were just going to put some dud out that nobody was going to want to go see and was going to put their track record at stake. But I saw all of this, you know, hand-wringing and like, oh, well, you know, they got Spider-Man, but of course, you know, of course the Black Panther got, it's like everybody got their fucking movie moved. Black Panther got moved, Thor got moved, Captain Marvel got moved. It's like, you know, stop trying to make everything about that. There is enough. There is more than enough pure, unadulterated, undeniable racism and discrimination and prejudice out there in the world, where anytime something unfortunate happens to something or somebody black, doesn't mean that it is part of this worldwide white conspiracy to, you know, push us to the side and turn us into, you know, some kind of some kind of, you know, like a segment of the population that doesn't matter. It's like, all people have to do is look. Look at what happened to TV this year. It's like, it's over. If these companies want to make money, they are going to diversify their product and their creative teams. They have no... It's already happened. The change
this is true.
And they're just rushing to catch up to it. I guarantee you, there are going to be so many black people in this next set of pilots. Like, people are going to think like this is TV One. It is going to be brown people all over the place.
Yeah, and for those who might not be aware, what Brandon Thomas is referring to is this last season on television, you've seen the arrival of at least three shows that specifically highlight or center African-American leads. And that would be How to Get Away with Murder, which stars Viola Davis, Blackish, which stars Anthony Anderson and Tracee Ellis Ross, as well as a bunch of other great, Larry Fishburne's involved too. Yep. And then you also have the blockbuster, unprecedented hit Empire, which is confounding experts because Empire's ratings grow each week.
Every week.
And that is something that does not happen in television.
Not for black shows, not even for white shows.
I mean, in fact, the only show that I know that did better at the end than the beginning was Angel. Mm-hmm. And season five, the ratings were higher than they ever had been for seasons one through four. And that was unprecedented. And that was only because, you know, it had a chance to find an audience on a WB network for quite some time. And you don't see that happen anywhere, any place in the world, but somehow Empire, week after week, is only built on its audience. Now, I work now at ABC Disney Studios. Well, Disney ABC, actually. I specifically work at ABC Studios. And I can't talk about anything that I've seen, and I can't talk about people I've, you know, spoken with or anything. But I do know, and you can find this out by reading Variety or Hollywood Reporter or Deadline.com. There is a very sustained push for new voices and specifically diversity. It's not because these people are suddenly caring about people of color, but because it's a fantastic business decision. Because advertisers who basically control television want to reach certain audiences. And if a black-themed or Latino-themed or a Asian-themed or Native American-themed show can bring a certain audience to advertisers, by God, they want that audience. And if that means hiring a bunch of black folks behind the scenes, it's happening. It is actually happening. If it means hiring some black people in front of the camera, that also is literally happening right now. So... Yep. I would say that a lot of the things that people are complaining about, because I don't want to be negative every time we talk, because there's so many amazing positive things going on, but it's just like in between each of our podcast episodes, we're deluged. We're faced with this tidal wave of absolute negativity and bitching and whining. And it's so, and I don't understand, like, it's like, do these people not realize how many cool things are happening?
I don't know.
Or they just choose to focus on a negative? Because it's a choice, just like ignorance. Ignorance in the 21st century is a choice. If you are a genre fan in the 21st century, anger and disappointment is a choice. There are literally 50 different things you can invest your time in. BBC has science fiction shows.
Yep.
Okay. WGN has fantasy and horror shows and science fiction shows. You know, Fox has horror and fantasy and science fiction shows. CW's entire fucking block is science fiction
and fantasy.
You know, NBC doesn't really have much, neither does ABC. But the point is that if you want something and you're not being satisfied by this one thing, there are literally 49 other choices that you have.
Look harder.
You know, I mean, and a funny thing about it, when you say look harder, a person actually doesn't even have to look harder. All they have to do is turn on their Xbox or PS4 or PS3 or PS2, you know, on Xbox Live. You know, for example, I was never a fan of the Brian Michael Bendis comic series Powers. People love it. I just never liked it. Right. However, guess what? On the Sony network, there's a Powers show.
Yep.
You know, if you hate all the stuff that Marvel and DC is doing and you want to see something else, guess what? There is something else. And you can even watch the Powers pilot for absolutely free. In about 3.5 weeks, Daredevil is going to be on Netflix.
I'm so ready.
Looks amazing. You've got fucking Vincent D'Onofrio.
D'Onofrio is the kingpin.
And I mean, you got Rosario Dawson in it, who's like a heartthrob in the geek world. You've got a really amazing cast top to bottom. You know, let's look at all the really cool stuff that's going on. After Daredevil, we're going to get a Jessica Jones series. We're going to get a Luke Cage series. We're going to get Iron Fist. And then they're all going to come together for the Defenders. We're getting this, like, stuff all at one time. I mean,
it's happening now.
I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is on. Agent Carter was fantastic. One of the most beautiful women acting today, Haley Atwell, did a 7-episode stint or 8-episode stint on ABC for free. You just turn on your TV and you get more of the Marvel Universe in the 40s for free. You know, these are all these choices we've got. And I'm just saying, you know, ignorance is a choice. Disappointment is a choice. You know, anger is a choice. Stop making the wrong decision. Stop being on the wrong side of history. Yes. Don't worry. That's all I have to say about it. And I wanted to highlight two really cool, positive things. One is that Kelly Sue DeConnick and her husband, Matt Fraction, have gotten a massive deal over at Universal Studios with an NBC Universal Comcast empire for their comic book work, specifically Sex Criminals, is currently going to be in development.
Yep.
And for production. They also have many of their other titles are going to be considered or pushed into development. And then on the other hand, which is even bigger news, Valiant Comics, the Valiant Comics universe, secured a $100 million deal from a company called DMG, which is a Chinese-based firm, to develop their comic book series into films and TV shows. So, in the Valiant Universe has Archer and Armstrong, the Harbinger kids, you've got Bloodshot, you've got Ninjak, Exo Man of War, you got the Unity Universe in general. I mean, there's so much going on that's positive. I don't understand how any genre fan can be unhappy. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, all it really turns into ultimately is nitpicking. And for all those who claim, well, I have a right to an opinion, you do. But you also should have a right to an informed opinion.
Man, look, I'm just... that's just what I want from people. The thing that I want from people... people have to learn... It's like... People are used to losing all the time, right? Or not even all the time. People were used to like a period of losing everything like over and over and over again, that it's impossible to take the win. And that's something that I always try to, to tell myself. Take the win. It's like Matt Fraction and Kelly Sue DeConnick, who are putting out some of the best creator-owned comics right now. Like, these are the comics that people need to be reading. You should be reading Sex Criminals and Bitch Planet and Odyssey and Pretty Deadly. And reading these comics should be more important to you than Batman's robot suit. And I mean, and I realize that, maybe those aren't maybe those books aren't your type of books. But just like you said, the Valiant Universe, relaunched a few years ago.
Right.
And they have put out consistent, good superhero product. If you are tired of Marvel and DC and their costume changes and their this and that, why don't you try some Valiant books? I mean, read Bloodshot, read Ninjak. I mean, these are comics that are produced by great writers great artists. They are, you know, there's a small number of them, so they're very easy to keep up with. You know, it's not like you have to make a 25 title investment if you're one of those people that needs to buy everything. But these are the things in comics that are going to ultimately propel and save the comics industry, because Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman comics, they are not going to broaden the scope of the comics industry. These smaller companies, these creator-owned projects, a Powers TV show, a Walking Dead TV show, these are the things that are actually making comics economically viable for people that actually want to create new things. They want to do more than just, you know, write Superman and Batman for 12 months and then their shit gets erased and the costume is different. Like, to me, with so many exciting things going on in the realm of creator-owned comics and the realm of independent comics, like you said, it's a choice. Ignorance and unhappiness. If you're unhappy with comics, you know, I'm sorry, but it's your fault. It's not Marvel's fault. It's not DC's fault. There are so many cool and exciting things going on in comics that if you can't, out of all of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comics that are released every month, if you can't find some to read that make you passionate about comics, you know, you're fucking it up. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. And I just wish that people would take the win. There are so many exciting things happening. No, things are not perfect. No, there are a lot of things that we need to get better at. But a lot of people don't want to come out and admit in public that I only give a shit about mainstream comics, which is fine. Right. That's fine. If you're not into, you know, crime comics or creator-owned comics, that's fine. But you have to realize that when you do that, you close yourself off to an entire world of things that you might actually enjoy. And you have to take responsibility for that as a personal choice and not blame Marvel and DC for putting out a bunch of, you know, quote-unquote shitty comics that you don't want to read. I mean, it's really no excuse. There's so many things happening. Does everybody heard that there's a new Star Wars movie coming out at the end of the year? I mean, I don't know if you know, y'all have heard about that, but, I mean, it's episode 7, man. I'm just trying to get to it. Can I live long enough to get there? I mean, seriously. But, I mean, there's too much happening. There's too much exciting happening right now. There's too much positive happening to, you know, to dwell so much on, you know, these negative, nitpicky aspects. You know, and seriously, if people devoted all of this passion and all of this intensity about the mainstream companies diversifying their talent pools, then maybe we would be a lot further along on that path. But everybody is more concerned about costume changes. Like, that's the shit that people care about. And, you know, you can if you want to, but you're missing out. You're missing out on a lot. And, you know, and it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be that way.
It does not.
So, I don't know, man. That's it. I'm done talking about that.
Yeah, I mean...
And we'll see y'all next time.
Yeah, right. No, in all honesty, though, I would say that this is a lot... There's a lot of good stuff coming out. Now, I think that... looking back at Black History Month, and that's where, you know, we're now in March. It's like when March 12th and Black History Month, you know, we could talk about Milestone's return to the comic book universe or into the intellectual property sphere. I know that the announcement came down, and I don't really know what the plans are, but I think that another good sign for the future is the fact that, you know, the Milestone brand has not disappeared. The Milestone brand is still a living thing. It's still with us. And hopefully we can look forward to seeing some amazing adventures within the next year or so. You know, I don't know too much about anything behind the scenes as far as what's going on with Milestone. All I know is what I read online is that they're coming back and they are going to be putting out some new material. And that just sounds fantastic to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. I mean, it's not a fluke. It's not a fluke. Like, it's, right. You know, it's time. It's time for some change. And,
right. You
know, I just hope that people are willing and able emotionally to support things like the return of Milestone. Because, right. You know, on the internet, we get into a lot of things where people claim that certain things are the type of things that they want. And then when the things come out, there's some reason why, I don't want to support it because, you know, Batman's robot suit. I gave up on comics because, you know, DC changed Superman's suit and put him in pants. And now I can't buy comics anymore.
Right. Now, with that said, also, I think, you know, I'm trying to stay positive because, you know, we've been deluged with negativity. But I want to give a shout out to VixenVarsity.com. And the people who started the hashtag Black Comics Month, they went above and beyond the call of duty to highlight so many independent Black produced comics that I wanted to give them another shout out because they did excellent work. They highlighted not only me and the Watson and Holmes crowd, but they just highlighted so many other folks. And I also want to give a very special shout out to the first winner of the annual Dwayne McDuffie Diversity in Comics Award, which was awarded over at the Long Beach Comic Con a couple of weeks ago, Nyla Magruder. I just want to give her shout out for her book MFK, and I think you can find it at like MFK Comics, or just go to Google and look up MFK webcomics, mm-hmm. and Nyla Magruder, and she's the first winner. I was fortunate enough to be able to attend the ceremony. It was just an amazing day, and it was just a great feeling that finally things just might change for the better in comics. TV is already changing. Film is a different world. But comics always, to this day, racially speaking, feels like it's still about 25 years behind the rest of pop culture. But at this event, and I spoke to our friend and colleague, Jeff Thorne, who works on the TV series Librarians, which is on the TNT network. We feel like, you know, something is definitely happening. There's a change in the wind where in the past, there's been talk about the comic book industry being accepting of Blacks and Latinos and Asians and white women and women of color. Instead of just saying women, because there are white women and also women of color, you know, who get ignored a lot for some reason.
Yeah. Diversity, you know, equals white women for a lot of people. Sometimes.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case for the comic book industry specifically. Mm-hmm. So, but we really did feel that there's a change. And as Dwayne McDuffie's widow said, we're not invisible, we're inevitable. You know, which is something which is actually written, I'm paraphrasing, but that is written on
the award
itself. You know, not invisible, but inevitable. You cannot change, you cannot keep a society the way it was 50 years ago. The comic book industry is still trying to hold on to the last vestiges of the Silver Age population. And no disrespect to the folks who came before me, but it's 2015, not 1965. You know, you got to let that Silver Age population go. Let them go. You know, they're going to be okay. You know, they have 120 years of comics to look back on. You know, like, you know, let's start looking at the fact that there's a word or a phrase that's used in the studio system and it's also used in every system where there's intellectual property, where you want to make money. And it's a two-word phrase. It's called franchise sustainability. You want your property to stay around. This is why in Japan, there's this series called Mobile Suit Gundam, which is basically the most popular anime series of all time. Do you know why Gundam is still around after 40 years? Because they change it every now and then. You know, the Gundam that came out in 1979 is nothing like the Gundam that was released in 2002.
And it's not expected that it would be.
And every time they announced a new Gundam series, Gundam fanboys who were fans of the previous iteration will bitch and complain for years and months online until they just accept the fact that the people that own Gundam do not give a fuck about what they say. They will continue to change Gundam. You know what else is like that in the United States? Transformers. I do not fucking like what Michael Bay has done to Transformers. But guess what? Do you honestly think Michael Bay gives a shit what Brandon Easton thinks? He does not.
No,
he
doesn't even know who the fuck I am. Because his Transformer movies make billions of dollars worldwide.
And literally make a billion.
That's another thing that people, always overlook. The international box office draw of these movies, of these franchises, is basically domestic. I don't want to say it doesn't matter anymore, but in a lot of ways, it doesn't matter. I mean, domestic gross now is basically like gravy. The real
33%. That's about roughly
the real money is being made overseas. And overseas, they love those Michael Bay Transformers movies. Yep. And I think part of the reason why a lot of, you know, these kind of quote unquote like hated movies over here make, mm-hmm. you know, do a lot better internationally is because, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but it just seems like that maybe China isn't filled with a bunch of, you know, snarky know-it-all assholes online that are dissecting every single thing that exists, you know, a year before it even exists.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that's true, but I just feel like part of American culture is bitching. Like, we have so much. Generally, we don't all have so much, but generally, we have so much. We have so much access to all of these things. And like you said, it's made us unappreciative. We don't appreciate anything anymore.
Nope, exactly.
And you know what? I saw the first three of those Michael Bay Transformers movies, and you know, I liked the first one okay. I thought the second one was one of the most racist movies I've ever seen.
It is literally one of the most racist films ever made.
And I thought the third one, I was like, well, maybe this one will be better. Maybe the second one was because of the strike, blah, blah, blah. And I saw the third one, and I hated that one too. So you know what I did when the fourth one came out? I didn't go see it. And you know, and I can hold that in my head. Like, I can hold the idea in my head that, you know, I decided not to give money to this, but I understand that there are other people that did give money to it and enjoyed it. And maybe, maybe these Michael Bay Transformers movies are just not for me, but
yeah. And that's extremely important.
That's fine because, you know, like episode 7 is coming out in December and I don't care about Transformers movies.
and that kind of gets back to, you know, the point you just made. This is all really about franchise sustainability. Marvel is absolutely not going to stay the same way. They're already doing a massive universe reboot, something they say they never do, mm-hmm. but they are going to do a massive universe reboot, just like DC did with Crisis and supposedly did with the New 52. And because you know what? Most people growing up now, the new generation of potential Marvel Comics readers are not going to know anything about the pre Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's just not possible for them to understand it, you know? I have a colleague, and I'm not going to say her name, I'm not going to say what she does for a living, but this is a very powerful woman at a very powerful studio, and she told me flat out, I don't like reading Marvel comics because I don't understand what's going on. And when, and the thing is, this lady is interested in reading Marvel comics, you know? But she says, I can't read it because it doesn't make any sense. So, by Marvel understanding the fact that they have to align their cinematic universe, which for, I'd say, 70% of the population, actually, no, 97% of the population in the United States, they only know the Marvel universe that way. So doesn't it make sense for franchise sustainability, just logic talking, for the comics to reflect that instead of making the comics this incomprehensible fuckwad of nonsense stories that go back 35, 40 years? I mean, it only makes sense to clean it up so that new people can get involved. Right. It only makes sense. And for all of the folks that don't like what's going on, then don't buy it. Let the new people enjoy it.
Please don't buy it. Please, you know, don't buy it.
So, I mean, DC... I mean, you know, I'm not going to trash DC. They have ups and downs, just like Marvel has ups and downs. You know, there's some stuff at DC I really enjoy reading, and there's some stuff at Marvel I really enjoy reading. The stuff that I don't like, guess what? I don't say anything about it. Nope. Like, what is that going to do? You know, getting online and then, you know, like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I was one of the worst fanboys in the fucking world. And I realized how stupid I was. Looking back, I mean, I can't even think of a word to describe the level of fucking stupidity that I was living in, you know, because I would get mad about shit that nobody literally gives a fuck about, you know.
The word, not for you, but the word that always comes to mind when I see this stuff online is that everyone is so unreasonable about everything.
Oh, I was unreasonable. I mean, dude, it was absurd. The level of my, I mean, literally, I use the word stupid as not just a euphemism, but it is a literal description of my behavior. I was very stupid. And I was stupid because I didn't understand the nature of the industry. I was stupid because I didn't take the time to learn how things operated, mainly because up until the internet age, you could not learn anything about the movie and TV industry or the comic book industry without actually being in it.
Right.
Now, you don't have to be in it to learn. You could just go to Google and type in, how does the comic book industry work? How does somebody become a writer in comics? How do movies get cast? I'm not trying to be funny here, but you could literally do this. All you got to do is look it up. That's it. And you can learn. So my point is, franchise sustainability is the chief operating mantra, the chief operating motive of all these major media companies. All the major media companies on earth are now content generators, meaning that they just want to create shit for you to buy and read and continually come back. They want you as a lifetime customer. Then what happens is in 15 years, after they've already used up this group of fans, they want to start nurturing the next generation of fans.
Yep.
And it's only business. It's been that way since the beginning of media, you know, and you know, I'll give you this is something that even anybody, I doubt any non-comic people are listening to this, but let's look at sports coverage, right? You know, when I was a kid, watching sports on TV was one of the most boring fucking things you could have possibly done unless you really loved the sport, because generally speaking, with the exception of very few really good sports commentators, shit was really boring. Football looked awful on television. Baseball was even worse.
Yes.
Then what they did, and this is fucking brilliant, they decided to add graphics to the NFL, NHL, NBA, and MLB. And because they realized, somebody somewhere realized that a lot of kids watching who don't watch sports play sports video games. And guess what happened, folks? Have you noticed that sports broadcasting looks like a video game now?
Yep.
Doesn't it? I mean, think about this, folks. And it's not because and there's a lot of traditionalists who fucking hate that. But guess what? Nobody gives a fuck about the traditionalists because kids started watching NBA. There was a point when the NBA ratings were really low. People don't know about this. I mean, younger folks might not, but particularly after Jordan retired, yeah. I never went back after Jordan retired personally to the NBA. But there was a lot of people, traditionalists like myself for NBA, who just stayed away from basketball. because I felt like the new age, these new guys, they don't have fundamentals. They miss layups. They miss open shots. They don't know how to dribble. They don't know how to pass. And I just thought that's just my opinion. Now, there's another generation of kids who only played basketball on video games. And it seems like the style of play that these young men are playing in the real game seems like they're playing like a video game. Everybody's trying to do these fancy moves and make passes across the court. Nobody knows how to play small ball in basketball. Nobody, you know, in baseball, everybody's trying to hit a home run. Everybody tried to hit a home run so bad that pitchers are starting to dominate because they just know how to pitch to people who only try to hit home runs. Like, one of the people are like, why is the home runs, count dropping in the MLB? Because, you know, there's no more steroids. No, it's because everybody keeps trying to hit home runs. If you're a pitcher, you know how to pitch to people who keep swinging for the fences. It's very simple. But anyway, my point is that to keep baseball fresh, to keep NFL fresh, to keep the hockey, you know, NHL fresh, and they had to find a way to upgrade it visually to get younger audiences interested. And specifically with the rise of fantasy baseball and fantasy football and fantasy hockey and fantasy basketball, you know, they found a way to make it interactive even more so.
Right.
You know, and this is something that the industries all had to kind of accept that. Accept the fact that the newer generation does not want to sit there and listen to a Howard Cosell kind of announcer. I like that kind of announcer personally, right? But the younger guys want to hear like a hip hop thing. They want fast stuff. They want to hear loud, explosive, lots of noise, lots of graphics. You know, like I was watching, you know, I watch a lot of NFL. I watch a lot of MLB. When they do transitions, it sounds like somebody's tearing metal in half. It's like
everything is transforming and blowing up and stuff is getting kicked. And
yeah, and I'm like, why are there giant robots on my NFL transitions?
It's like, that's Fox.
Yeah, like there's these robots that blow the shit out of the screen. And I'm like, all right, I'm like, what? Like, I mean, like, I'm like, am I seeing a movie trailer or is this the fucking transition? You know what I mean? From like from the replay to the to the new action, to the huddle.
Right.
I'm like, what the fuck is going on? But you know, that's the point though.
And then also another big thing that plays into this is that, you know, it's kind of one of those things that's, you know, comics and these movie universes. One of the reasons why sports broadcasts are the way that they are is because they want to make it easier for people to watch it. They don't want everybody, you know, to be completely obsessed with football. Even if you don't know everything about football, with all of the graphics and the commentary, you could still follow it. Like, you can still follow sports that you don't even really fully understand because of all of the graphics and all of the commentary. And that's exactly the type of perspective that these movie studios are trying to bring to these comic universes. They can't distill 75 years worth of Batman comics into 2 hours. So they have to simplify it. They have to strip it down and they have to make it something that a normal person could, you know, can actually plug into and enjoy. And they're not going to make a comic book movie or a comic book TV show for the person that has read every single comic appearance of the character that they're watching, because it's impossible and it's stupid. You can barely even read comics, you know, let alone try to watch a movie tell a story in 2.5 hours.
Exactly. And what Brandon is talking about, folks, is what I started with. It's called franchise sustainability. That's what it's called, folks. Anytime something changes over the course of about 15 to 20 years, nothing is going to stay the same. No. And as a lifelong Transformers fan, and specifically a lifelong Generation 1 Transformers fan, I went through my period of bitching and whining and complaining. And then one day, guess what happened? I was like, you know what? I can still pop in, it's like 100-something episodes of Generation 1 stuff, which includes Beast Wars. I mean, I have that. I don't need to worry about all the new Transformers shows that offend me, because who gives a fuck? Hasbro doesn't care what I think. So instead of complaining, I just go back and watch you know, when I'm feeling nostalgic, I go back and watch the shows I grew up on and look at how fucking horrible they actually were. You know, so it's like you try to watch G.I. Joe or Thundercats or Transformers from the 80s. That shit looks horrible by today's standards. Yes. And the plots aren't that great. But we connected to it for a specific reason. I'll give you, I mean, I said this before. I fucking hate Dragon Ball Z. I hate everything. I fucking hate everything that has to do with Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, and Dragon Ball GT. I don't like any Dragon Ball anything. But there was a generation of kids who grew up right after me for whom their Transformers is Dragon Ball. You know, their G.I. Joe and Voltron and Robotech, which are shows I loved during my childhood. For these kids after me, the kids in the 90s, they grew up on Batman the Animated Series. They grew up on Dragon Ball. They grew up on Nickelodeon shows I hadn't even fucking heard of.
Rugrats.
You know, I mean, yeah, I'm not a fan of that show. I'm like, what the fuck is that? You know, I don't, you know, but again, getting back to my original point, that's okay. It's not for me. It's not for me, and I'm okay with that. You know, and that's really all I have to say. You know, and I think that I just wish more people would listen to us and understand that, you know, you don't have to be upset because shit'll move on, man. You know, there's always new shit coming out you can complain about. You know, if the old shit doesn't, you don't like, let's find something else.
Man, there's some new shit coming out next week.
Bam.
Next week. There is a whole new set of comics coming out on Wednesday.
A bunch of number ones. There's always a number one.
There's always new number ones coming out. Always. If you're talking DC and Marvel, they're from the same character, but, you know, whatever. I mean, what are you going to do about it? If people bought 12s, Marvel would put out 12s. But since people don't buy fucking 12s, they got to put out one. So I don't know. You know, that's not their fault. That's our fault. You know, we've done that. We have created the comics industry that we have. And going forward, we need to acknowledge the changes that are happening. And we need to support those changes with dollars and with passion. And we need to do, that's what we need. We need that a lot more than we need complaining about Wonder Woman's costume and complaining about female Ghostbusters.
Oh,
and
God.
It's like, come on, man. Nobody gave a fuck about Ghostbusters. If they have to make them all female to allow Ghostbusters to exist in this modern world, it's like, people would rather not have it.
Well, no, it's not people. There's that pocket of bitching and complaining.
That's true.
Because a lot of people were super excited.
I'm super excited.
You know, and I was going to, you know, to change gears a little bit to a slightly sadder note, because you were talking about number ones. And one of the biggest number ones in my life was Leonard Nimoy. And I have to say, you know, rest in peace to Leonard Nimoy, who played Mr. Spock on the original Star Trek show from the 60s. And he was even respected so much, he was brought into the new rebooted Star Trek universe. And Leonard Nimoy was quite literally one of the greatest actors. He made you believe in a character that quite literally did not exist, and an alien that does not exist. He did so much behind the scenes in a humanitarian effort. And I just feel that we are losing some really great folks, and those folks we're losing aren't being replaced with anyone of great anything. You know, I don't really feel
equal value.
Yeah, I mean, we've already lost Bill Cosby, we've lost Robin Williams, you know, and then Leonard Nimoy checks out, and you know, the guy was just brilliant on so many levels, and I just wanted to give a shout out to Leonard Nimoy and say rest in peace, sir, for, you know, you did so much. You know, did a lot for the Jewish American community, did a lot for the international community of human beings, period, and Star Trek, you know, regardless of what people feel about it, has had a tremendous impact on the planet Earth. There are very few shows. The only thing that rivals Star Trek's popularity and influence is Star Wars, you know, and I just wanted to say that because I think a lot of the times that we forget how awesome, you know, things we had were, you know, how awesome, how many things we have are. And Leonard Nimoy is someone who will never get a chance to see act again. And I can tell you every time that man was on screen, you paid attention to him, regardless of whether you like Star Trek or not. He had a presence and a strength that, you really can't replace. And, you know, when William Shatner goes, I mean, there's what, I think three or four Star Trek people left. It's William Shatner, Nichelle Nichols, Walter Koenig, who played Chekhov, and Sulu, George Takei. You know, and these people represent a massive change and a massive shift. And you really got to think about this. When Star Trek came out in 66, here you had a show that had all kinds of people on the bridge of a starship at a time when the nation itself was ripping itself apart. In the same way where we've moved ahead a little bit, but we haven't really gotten as far as we would have liked. And to see these folks still with us, and now they're starting to leave us, we really have to put things into perspective and really, and this kind of ties a lot of what we were saying. I think we should really just appreciate more, because one day the people that we respected, our heroes, they're not going to be here anymore. And what will we have to complain about then? You know? And I kind of feel that way. And, you know, God bless you, Leonard Nimoy, and thanks for Star Trek. And along that note, as I mentioned, Star Wars is a major impact. You know, the Star Wars number one comic was the first comic to sell a million copies in God knows how long. You know, and
decades, I think.
Yeah, and you see what I'm, you know, I just feel like as we've been saying repeatedly, there's all these good things out there. Like the Star Wars comic is fucking awesome.
It is.
You know?
It's been really good so far.
Yeah, and I just feel that, you know, let's celebrate more. I just wish I could get on a Facebook one day and just see nothing but positive posts. Just, you know, just one day, you know, where people were like, list all the shit you like.
Right.
You know, and nobody comment on what's wrong with it. Just say, this is all the cool shit I like. Make a list of all the cool shit I think is awesome. I don't want to hear nobody say anything contrarian. Don't be like, well, that's cool, but no, no buts. Just say, this is the shit I like. You know, how different if one, imagine how different the, like, you know, social media would be if everybody just talked about positive things for one day.
Right, for a day.
Just one day. That's all I'm asking for. Just one day, like maybe 8 hours, because, you know, most of us are like at work, you know? So, so that's all I have to say, really.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't have said it better myself, and I think that's a great spot to leave it there. We want to thank you guys for listening again, and let you guys know that we are both working on very, very exciting things.
Absolutely.
Around these podcasts that will come to fruition and get announced like in the next several months. And we want to thank you for your support. And, you know, we just want to encourage people, just take the win. There's so much greatness. There is so much greatness. And there are so many things out right now to be inspired by, to be influenced by. And disappointment is a choice. And hate and negativity is a choice, and want people to, like you said, just appreciate the things that we have. We don't have everything that we deserve or everything that we want, but we have a lot. We have a lot to be proud of, and you know, we have a lot to celebrate.
Damn straight.
And that's it. That's all I got. Thank you guys again. And, you know, we'll probably see you around Avengers time, knowing our track record.
Well, we should do a pre-Avengers episode.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk about, you know, we also definitely should get into our own Avengers history, because I didn't really appreciate too many of the Avengers comics during the 80s, mm-hmm. even when, you know, they had Roger Stern and or Mark Grunwald around. I did read a lot of the Captain America books back uh-huh. when Mike Zeck was doing the artwork. Mm-hmm. I really loved that particular run, but I was never an Avengers fan because I always felt the Avengers were a very boring comic, mm-hmm. and a lot happened for me as a comic book reader to change my opinion. And mainly Kurt Busiek helped that along the way. and as well as Wizard Magazine, which hyped the hell out of certain creators, which allowed me, the now defunct Wizard Magazine, which allowed me to give things a chance I normally would not have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as someone who grew up with the Avengers not being something anybody cared about, it's really interesting to see how that shifted.
Yeah.
You know, because when I was a kid, it was all about X-Men. I mean, X-Men was everything. X-Men basically kept Marvel afloat. Yep. In fact, X-Men was the ruler by which comic book sales were judged, you know.
Yes.
And that changed when Dreamwave released Transformers issue 1 that was drawn by Pat Lee back in the early 2000s, because it was the first time an independent book had steadily outsold X-Men in the way that it had. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, other books had outsold it, but not for 5 straight months. So X-Men was the industry measuring stick, and now Avengers basically has supplanted that.
Yep.
And is now the Marvel bread and butter. So I think we're definitely going to get into...
Yeah, let's do that. That'll be
our own personal history with the Avengers books, particularly the characters that we like, because I think that we definitely need to talk about... And this is something I really want to do. I really think we should talk about how we feel about who was cast as the Avengers characters. And I think we should talk about our feelings on those movies. Like, I think we should do like a Marvel Cinematic Universe retrospective.
Cool.
You know, and I think that'll come out sometime way before the movie comes out, so we can so we can really break it down.
Look for that sometime in early April, probably.
Yeah, that would be really good to do, because I have a lot to say about the casting, and it's not going to be me bitching and complaining. I'm just going to talk about what I think worked and what I think didn't work in the Marvel Universe casting. And I really do think that they have about a 98% success record, you know, with their casting. The only issue with casting I have is the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show, but that's another, like I said, again, that's another situation. Right. So, with
that said, even if you pay attention to S.H.I.E.L.D., they have been taking steps to improve that.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. has made a miraculous turnaround once they decided to serialize the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a brilliant strategy, and it's clearly worked.
Yep. All right, well, let's not get into it. We're going to talk about it right now too much.
Right, I know, right? So
we're giving y'all too much too soon.
Well, that's our preview.
All right, yeah, that's the trailer. All right. So we will see you guys next time. Thank you again for dropping by. Pass the link around. Thank you for the support. And that's it. We out.
Take care. Peace.
All right, peace.